Carolinas are being swamped by these heavy rains and high winds from Hurricane Florence.
The best scientists in the world are all telling us that our activities are changing the climate.
I don't think it's a hoax. I think there's probably a difference, but I don't know that it's man-made.
Experts say that we have until 2030 to avoid catastrophe.
Welcome to 2 The Point's Climate Change Update. I'm Warren Alney. Teenagers around the world are mobilizing to demand action on climate change. One leader is the Swedish teenager Greta Thunberg, who's called for repeated school strikes in 110 countries. She's urging people her age to show up outside houses of parliament and other places where national and international policies are made. And after all, science has demonstrated it's hers and their future that faces catastrophe. Many Americans grew up watching Bill Nye, the science guy. He says now that it's about time for them to pay more attention. On HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, he used language that many listeners might think is not fit for children, but that's not who he's talking to.
By the end of this century, if emissions keep rising, the average temperature on Earth could go up another 4 to 8 degrees. What I'm saying is the planet's on fucking fire. There are a lot of things we could do to put it out. Are any of them free? No, of course not. Nothing's free, you idiots. Grow the fuck up. You're not children anymore. I didn't mind explaining photosynthesis to you when you were 12, but you're adults now, and this is an actual crisis. Got it?
The new voice of Bill Nye, the science guy. That tough talk raises a very important question. Is it enough to use the phrase climate change to describe what's in store? Does it convey the appropriate sense of urgency? The Guardian newspaper says it's time for a new terminology. Oliver Millman is environmental reporter at the newspaper. And Oliver, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Warren.
What's better language?
So, essentially, we've been having a discussion internally for quite some time about the best way to convey the full kind of range of impacts that the changes happening to our climate system will have. And climate change itself can come across as quite a kind of remote and kind of clinical term to a lot of people. It doesn't often tally with the consequences that it has when you're talking about millions of people being potentially displaced, when you talk about droughts and storms that are often deadly, wildfires that are deadly. Climate change can seem quite a kind of almost passive term.
So what do you say instead?
So we're looking at terms like climate emergency, climate crisis, climate breakdown, all of those to kind of really more accurately reflect the actual crisis that is happening. It's actually unfolding now. It's not even something that's going to happen in the future. It's something we're seeing right now. So those are the terms we're looking to use a little bit more than we have done in the past.
Is that way of turning journalism into advocacy?
No, I think it's kind of using the correct language to accurately describe something. I mean, I think if you had the kind of consequences that result from climate change in any other arena of life, whether it was an act of terrorism or war or a natural disaster kind of prior to the time when humans were influencing the climate and people were being displaced, people were dying, people were suffering from food and water insecurity in very large numbers, I think no one would really quibble about calling that an emergency or a crisis. I think, obviously, climate change has become very politically loaded in recent years, but I don't think we should shy away from using those terms when it comes to climate change as well.
But when you talk about emergency and crisis and breakdown, all of which sound to me like accurate terms, how do you do that without frightening people, without turning them off, without saying, wait a minute, there's nothing I can do about this, so I'll change the channel and not watch Bill Nye the Science Guy anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that's a kind of ongoing kind of issue that lots of journalists and scientists and advocates when it comes to climate change do discuss a lot. You don't want to frighten people into complacency, but I don't think we're at that point. I think we're at the point of where people aren't discussing it enough. I mean, there's a report that came out today from Media Matters that found that ABC spent more time covering the birth of the new royal baby than it did on climate change the entire of 2018. So we're not at a point where people are being frightened to death by this and talking about it nonstop in the media. We're at a point where it's not being covered to the extent it should be. And people, I mean, sometimes when frightening things are coming down the line, then the correct response is to be a little bit worried about it.
Are the media failing in a important responsibility to inform people of what might be in store?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think especially when you look at the major networks, if you look at what's going on at cable TV, there's very little talk about climate change. They will cover natural disasters in depth, whether that's hurricanes or wildfires. Very little is made of the link that scientists are kind of finding more and more about and making clearer and clearer each time there's one of these major disasters, there's more attribution to climate change. That link becomes clearer, yet we barely hear about it. We barely hear about climate change in other areas of life, even though it touches pretty much everything from the economy to immigration to national security. There's a kind of widespread failure to accurately describe the problem, but also in terms of the quantity, there's just not enough coverage.
The Guardian's not the only place where journalism is changing. The Nation magazine and the Columbia Journalism Review have organized hashtag Covering Climate Now. It begins with the idea that the media are complacent while the world burns. That's the headline on an article co-authored by Mark Hertzgaard. He's a veteran reporter on climate change at The Nation and other publications. He's organizer of hashtag Covering Climate Now. Mark Hertzgaard, welcome.
Always happy to be with you, Warren.
Elaborate a bit, if you will, on what we were just talking about with Oliver Millman about what the media are doing now and what they ought to be doing with regard to what we refer to as climate change. Maybe we should call it climate emergency, climate crisis, climate breakdown.
Yes, I think there has been some good climate coverage, but it is still the exception to the rule. In the last couple of years, you've seen some elite newspapers, notably the Washington Post and the New York Times, dramatically improve both the quantity and, I would say, the quality of their coverage. They are treating it much more like the five-alarm emergency that it is. And, of course, The Guardian newspaper, who is a partner with us on the Covering Climate Now project, I think The Guardian has been doing exemplary coverage for a long time. But the difficulty is that most of the media still is not doing that, especially in the United States. Most of the media, especially television, which, you know, like it or not, is still the place that most Americans get most of their news, is off of the big television networks. And they have been largely silent about climate change, the climate crisis. You know, Oliver just mentioned the recent study showing that they spent more time on the royal baby in a week at the networks than they did covering climate change in a year. That amounts to climate silence. And in the year 2019, with the way we're now up at 415 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. Humans have never experienced that before. We are seeing impacts almost on a daily basis. If you're not talking about climate change at this point in the media, if you're engaging in climate silence, that amounts to climate denial. And that's what we hope to change with this project of Covering Climate Now, to get to talk among ourselves as journalists and say, how do we do justice to what is, you know, certainly one of the one or two most important stories of our time. And we're just beginning this project. We rolled it out last week, and I would commend to everyone to have a look at the speech that Bill Moyers gave. He did the final keynote speech of the conference that launched the Covering Climate Now project. And he asked an interesting question. You know, he spent all of his long, illustrious career in television news. And he said, what would it be like if we covered the climate crisis the way we covered the start of World War II? And we would not let the idea that, oh, people don't want to hear about this get in our way. He tells a fascinating story in this speech about how Edward R. Murrow, the iconic TV broadcaster, in 1939, as Hitler is about to invade Poland, Murrow is told by the CBS brass in New York, no, there's been too much bad news coming out of Europe. We want some good news. Go cover a dance competition. And luckily for the world, Mr. Murrow and his team decided not to follow that order, and they went and covered the Poland invasion instead. That's the same kind of journalistic dedication and heat, if I may say, that we need today, and that's what we're trying to bring about with the Covering Climate Now project.
I have to say that I served as a television correspondent for quite a long time here in Los Angeles and in Washington and elsewhere. I'm not surprised to hear that. Obviously, it's shocking to hear it applied to the onset of World War II. But people in television hear that all the time. Tell us what developed at your conference with regard to MSNBC.
Yes, well, we started... I wrote a co-authored with Kyle Pope, the editor of the Columbia Journalism Review. We co-authored a framing paper for that conference. And the opening anecdote, I think, gets right at this problem. The belief within television, in particular, that covering climate is terrible for ratings, you're going to lose money. And we mentioned that that's essentially what Chris Hayes, the anchor at the All In with Chris Hayes show at MSNBC had said when he was criticized on Twitter for not doing more climate coverage. And he said, hey, you know, the ratings are always terrible. It's not exactly an incentive. And we talked about that. And it's interesting, of course, that is always a concern if you're working in commercial television. And Oliver, I'd be curious about him chiming in here, because we heard from Oliver's colleague, the deputy editor at The Guardian, at our conference, Jane Spencer, who said that, in fact, as The Guardian has dramatically increased its coverage of climate and environmental matters in general, it has seen revenues increase directly because of that. Why is that? Because people want to know. And if you cover this story the way that you need to get it across, people will respond. I think that, you know, you mentioned the climate kids who were out last Friday, demonstrating around the world. They, I think, put the lie to this idea that, oh, no, you can't talk about the dark side of climate change without turning people off. These kids are talking about exactly that, and they're doing that because that's the future that they have lined up for them, because the older generations have not acted. So, as journalists, we have to stop blaming the audience. It's not the audience's fault. It's our job as journalists to find ways to tell the story in a way that is compelling. That's what is our craft. If we're not able to do it, get a different job.
Oliver Millman, tell us more about The Guardian and how you've been making money by warning people about climate emergencies.
Sure. So the environment and climate change has long been a major issue for The Guardian. It's always been a top three or four topic for us. We've always devoted substantial resources to covering climate change, and we will continue to do so. In fact, we're hiring more people at the moment to help cover this story, because it is, as Mark said, the biggest story of our time. It's the biggest challenge of our time. And we are spending a lot of time and effort covering it. And in terms of how it relates to our financial position, we have a kind of model where we're funded by advertisers, but also by our readers. So on articles, people can donate money to us or set up reoccurring contributions. And our environmental coverage is a big driver of that. People are very engaged with it. People are read our stories quite religiously, and people feel that they want to make a change and have some kind of impact. So that's, I think, why that's proved to be very successful from a kind of commercial point of view.
I just have to say that since we started doing our climate change update at the suggestion of our producer, Andrea Brody, we've gotten an audience for that, too. And people do seem to want to follow it. We're doing it now on a weekly basis, and we're happy to be doing it. Back to Mark Hertzgard. What about the sponsors of commercial news programs? To what extent are they reluctant to see coverage of climate change because it might suggest that they're A, doing something wrong, or B, most importantly, might have to do something about it?
You know, that's one of the areas that we at Covering Climate Now hope to be investigating. You know, we're not going to be doing new climate coverage per se. Our brief is rather to cover the climate coverage. And that's one of the questions we're going to be asking, is why is it that so many of the networks aren't doing what journalistic responsibility would impel them to do? So I don't know the full answer to that, and I'm not sure that they will give us the full answer to it, but certainly that's part of it. Although I have to say, from my own sort of informal conversations with colleagues who happen to work in television, that generally the concern is not that. It's much more the feeling that, oh, we don't want to look political. You even mentioned it in your intro to this program, that this climate issue is supposedly seen as political. And that's where I think the skittishness of so many of the news outfits arises from. And let's be clear about that. You know, it's only in America, and now I guess recently in Australia, that climate science has been politicized. You know, going back to the 1990s, I've been covering climate change since 1989, and I've spent a lot of time internationally. And in the 90s, you could go across the entirety of Europe, at a time, by the way, when there were governments were being led by right-of-center political parties. None of them questioned the science of climate change. There would be arguments in those parliaments about what do you do about it, who pays, how fast do we move, et cetera, et cetera. But nobody on any end of the political spectrum questioned the science. That is only here in the United States. And that is because, as I've written in elsewhere, that the United States is a petrostate. We don't like to think of it that way, but just like Saudi Arabia, just like Russia, this country's economy, its political economy, has been based on oil and gas and coal for a very, very long time. And that kind of power and influence within government also spreads into the media. And so you've had a political party here, the Republican Party, that has deliberately tried to politicize climate science on behalf of the fossil fuel barons who do so much of the funding, the Koch brothers and Exxon and others, who we now know, of course, because of some brilliant investigative reporting, we know that Exxon has known since 1982 what they were doing to the planet. And they, instead of telling the truth and helping us all to avoid the terrible difficulties that my 14-year-old daughter and her generation are now locked into, instead of doing that, Exxon lied. Exxon lied to the public in order to keep their profits going. And so this idea that we can't talk about that is, I think, any journalist should be ashamed if they're afraid to talk about it because of that. And that goes for the news executives, too. You know, we have to stand up and remember our first principles as journalists. Our duty is to serve the public and to call the truth as we see it as best we can and let the chips fall where they may.
This is the To The Point Climate Change Update. We'll take a brief break and be back in a moment.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Warren Olney back with To The Point's Climate Change Update. Let me go back to Oliver Millman with The Guardian. How important is it, or how difficult does it make it, when we have the President of the United States, who has what is a bully pulpit heard around the world, is in fact, or has been certainly until recently, with a couple of subordinate clauses to sentences in a conversation with reporters, been a climate change denier? How do you report on him and at the same time report that what he's saying is nonsense?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because like you say, what the president says carries a lot of weight, and not just here in the US, but internationally. And one of the big concerns when Donald Trump said the US would withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement would be that other nations would follow suit. And thankfully, that hasn't really happened, although you've seen some backtracking by some nations who've taken their foot off the gas a little bit when it comes to greenhouse gas emission cuts at a time when they need to be accelerated if even the Paris Agreement is going to be met, let alone the actual cuts required to keep us within a kind of safe-ish kind of boundary, which is actually beyond that agreement. So what he says matters. I think we've kind of haven't fallen into the trap of covering every kind of false statement and mention of climate change by Trump, because that's all we would be doing, is to kind of unpacking and fact-checking those claims. I mean, I guess the kind of the reality of it, he doesn't really speak about climate change that much. He talks a lot about energy, which is obviously related to that, and he's sought to increase fossil fuel production, which is key in terms of whether we're going to address this crisis or not. So we've looked to kind of uncover the links to industry that are driving this, some of his appointments in terms of their conduct at the Department of Interior and the EPA. But in terms of Trump, I think it's it would be easy to get drawn into to everything he says. But like you say, we do have to report significant events and point out inaccuracies where they are.
Well, don't you also have to deal with the fact that he and others say that if we were to take the kinds of actions that are being demanded in order to cope with this, that there would be an enormous disruption to the economy, to everybody's way of life all over the world?
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the big kind of missing parts of this argument. We saw this recently in the election in Australia, actually, which happened on Saturday, where one party was the opposition was proposing a kind of ambitious plan on climate change, and the ruling party, the Conservative Party, kind of ran a kind of scare campaign, essentially talking about the cost of this plan, and they won off the back of that. They played into people's fears, and Australians were worried about the cost of actually tackling climate change, where there's plenty of research to show that the cost of climate change is going to far outweigh any cost of actually addressing it by trillions and trillions of dollars. If you even think about the number of people who would be displaced, the impact on agriculture, the impact from heat waves and wildfires, I mean, it's enormous, and it's global, and it's going to be ongoing. Whereas the transition to cleaner energy and sorting out transport and agriculture and so on will obviously cost money, but it will be a shorter term cost, and it will actually result in far cleaner air for people to breathe, far fewer deaths, and a more stable climate for generations to come.
Back to Mark Hertzgaard, as we talk about solutions, is it then incumbent on the media to say that if you don't adopt these solutions, the consequences could be a whole lot worse?
I think we just have to tell the truth and the facts, and that's one of the things that has really changed in the climate debate in the last 6 months, is that we are now, because of the introduction of the Green New Deal resolution in Congress, we are now as a nation, we are at least talking about a solution to this climate crisis that is commensurate to the scale of it. And Oliver's point about the costs are absolutely true of not dealing with it. But if you look at the if you do really good reporting on the Green New Deal, you can see that, in fact, if you do what it calls for, which is essentially to rewire the United States economy from top to bottom using energy efficiency and solar and wind, you would actually create an awful lot of jobs and a lot of economic benefit. It will not benefit ExxonMobil, that is true, unless they change their business model. But it would be very good for the vast majority of the American public. And I think that's one thing that has really, that the media has failed to get across. And we, you know, at our conference, we highlighted a critique in this regard by Carlos Maza of Vox, who pointed out that even as the networks covered the Green New Deal, they didn't ever do the basic journalism 101 of telling you what it is and what it would do. It was all about how is this going to play in the 2020 election? Is this going to make Democrats look like they're moving too far left? It was all this sort of, you know, tactical framing of inside baseball, inside the Beltway kind of conversation. And I think we need to get away from that for sure. And I also think that, you know, you were asking before about how do we talk about Trump and climate denial. Just the other day, last week, my nation colleague, Katrina VandenHool, in her weekly column at the Washington Post, pointed out that Trump has not really been criticized for what is arguably his greatest dereliction of duty as president, which is that he is accelerating the climate crisis. And you don't see that talked about in most mainstream coverage of this president. And I think that that is a real that's a real failing on our part, and we've got to be not afraid to do that. You know, and it's not like it's that hard. Look at when we cover his lies, we simply say, the president said X in paragraph one, and in paragraph two we say, this is without basis, or he provided no evidence, or this is known to be false. It's not a question of how do you do it. It's a question of deciding to do it.
And we're hearing that more and more, or reading that more and more, aren't we, except perhaps on television?
Well, you know, hope springs eternal that we can get this story right. As Bill Moyers said in that speech that launched this, our job as journalists is to tell this story so that people get it. People want to hear it, even though the reporting has not been great to date. They are now experiencing climate impacts in their own lives. Now is a moment of real opportunity for our business, American journalism, to step up and really make the stakes clear on this and the solutions. The solutions have to be part of every story we do, not just because that's good reporting, but because if we don't get this right, nothing else is going to matter. There aren't going to be any other stories to do if we don't get the climate story right.
We talked about MSNBC, the problems they're having, talking about how, allegedly at least, ratings don't go up when you discuss this subject, although it turns out perhaps that's not so true. What about Fox News? They have an enormous audience. Are they, in fact, to be singled out? Is that a fair thing to do as you, with hashtag covering climate now, report on journalism?
Absolutely. You know, they are the only major news outlet that I'm aware of who in 2019 are still practicing the false equivalence of putting up a climate denier with a credentialed scientist and pretending that somehow those two points of view are equal. So it's clear, you know, Fox News is not a news outfit. It is a propaganda outfit. And one of the things that we hope to do with covering climate now is to do some real reporting on that. Because to date, Fox News has been able to get away with peddling this nonsensical climate denial and not be called out, including by their fellow journalists. And I think that some focused coverage that talks to the anchors and the producers and the executives there and says, you know, what is your thinking here? Why is it? On what grounds are you not reporting the clear scientific consensus of the National Academy of Science and, you know, the entire scientific community around the world? Why are you not doing that? Get them to go on the record. Get them to own what they are doing. And perhaps that will lead to some degree of change because, you know, the shaming has its place, I think. And if you're not going to be doing the kind of coverage that journalistic ethics requires, you need to be called out for that.
How important do you think is this movement of young people led by Greta of Sweden?
I think it's extremely important. And it really, as I said earlier, it puts the lie to this idea that we can't talk plainly and honestly about climate change. These kids are able to cut through a lot of the jibber-jabber out there and say, wait a minute, you know, the planet really is on fire, like Bill Nye, the science guy, said in your clip, and to demand action. You know, I have enormous respect for what they're doing, and also, speaking as a father, I'm enormously thankful to them. I have a 14-year-old daughter. I wrote a book when she was little about what her generation was already locked into and the dangers of climate change. And to see the way that, you know, my daughter's 14 now, to see the way that these last years have been wasted as politicians dawdle and listen to the fossil fuel companies instead of to our children has been very depressing. So now the kids are taking it in their own hands and they're out in the streets. And I think it's a tremendously hopeful development.
Well, thank you both very much for being with us on this edition of our Climate Change Update. Oliver Millman, again, environmental reporter for The Guardian, and Mark Hertzgard with The Nation, organizer of hashtag Covering Climate Now, a project of The Nation and the Columbia Journalism Review and The Guardian as well. Great to have you both.
Thank you, Warren.
Thanks so much.
And let's make a point of learning to listen to our children.
We are on a school strike for the climate. Every Friday, we will sit outside the Swedish Parliament until Sweden is in line with the Paris Agreement. We urge everyone to do the same, wherever you are. Sit outside your parliament or local government building until your nation is on a safe pathway to a below 2-degree warming target.
This To The Point Climate Change Update was produced by Andrea Brody with audio assistance from Chris Wotherspoon. Our engineer is Chuck Prevetary. I'm Warren Alney. Be sure to listen to this week's To The Point about the chances for war in Iran. Give us a shout-out on social media. On Twitter, it's tothepoint_KCRW. You can reach me at warren.olney@kcrw.org, and that's O-L-N-E-Y. Thanks for listening.